It is Tuesday, November 6th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Happy Election Day. Support for KUAF comes from Walton Arts Center and the 10x10 Art Series, featuring Eileen Ivers and Immigrant Soul, Thursday, November 15th. Grammy Award winner Eileen Ivers is a 9-time All-Ireland Fiddle Champion and has performed with the London Symphony Orchestra, Boston Pops, Sting, Hall & Oates, and others. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
And support for KUAF also comes from NOARC and their NWA Human Resource Association's monthly meeting Thursday from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Springdale Holiday Inn. A panel of HR professionals will answer questions about legislative reforms and guidelines that affect all businesses. Registration required, NOARK.org for more information.
On this edition of Ozarks, two high-profile political operatives talk to Roby Brock about what they expect to happen as the ballots are counted tonight. Plus, an old-school arcade prepares to welcome asteroid fighters and pack people this week in Fayetteville.
But first, election officials expect a high voter turnout at the polls this year. Secretary of State Mark Martin is predicting 65% of the state's registered voters will cast a ballot. Alex Reed, with Martin's office, says they are researching voting numbers before 2000, but this year's early voter turnout is the largest in the last 12 years. He says for the high number of voters, everything is running smoothly.
Yeah, everything's going well. There's a couple snafus here and there, but the counties are doing great work, and we're working with them to help resolve any problems that counties or voters may have.
The Secretary of State's office says more than 439,000 people in the state have voted early or have voted by absentee ballot. Reed says about 375,000 voters voted early in 2008. And just a reminder, today is Election Day, the last day to vote. Polls open this morning at 7:30 and stay open until 7:30 tonight. If you're unsure of the location of your polling place, you can quickly check your voter registration at www.voterview.org.
Walmart is not coming to Bella Vista, at least for now. According to thecitywire.com, plans to construct a Walmart neighborhood market at the intersection of Highway 71 and Oldham Drive have been tabled following a decision by the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department. The Highway Department denied a request by the City of Bella Vista and Walmart for a traffic signal at the intersection. According to the department's letter of denial, the study submitted by the City and Walmart doesn't show large enough traffic volumes to warrant a traffic signal at the intersection, and that maintaining traffic flow on Highway 71 is a higher priority for the department. Officials with Walmart yesterday said that without a traffic signal, the property in question is not an ideal spot to build a store, and the company will move on to find a more suitable location. And voters in Bella Vista are being asked whether they want the city to rezone the property at the intersection of Highway 71 and Oldham Road. In June, property owner Betty Garcia asked the city to rezone the property from residential to commercial zoning. The City Council and Planning Commission voted to rezone the land, though enough opposed residents signed a petition to get the matter on the general election ballot.
The Army Corps of Engineers Little Rock District is proposing changes to lock and dam policies for recreational boaters on the Arkansas River. The policies would be an expansion of its preventative maintenance program. Corps spokesman John Balgavy says some boaters may be inconvenienced.
What we're looking at is allowing lockage during certain windows of the day. So it's not using it exactly when they might want to, but it's still allowing recreational use on the system.
But Balgavy says that's why they want to hear from the public.
We're trying to get the public's take on that and also some input on what times would be good and also days of the week, months of the year, what sort of things work out for the public the best, because we know that the system is used quite a bit by recreational boaters.
A series of informal workshops will be held this month in various cities along the river where the public can talk with Corps representatives. For the Ozark-Fort Smith area, a workshop will be held from 2 until 4 in the afternoon and from 5 until 7 p.m. November 13th at the Arkansas Valley Electric Cooperative on West Commercial Street in Ozark.
Like many other school districts in the area, the Rogers School District has applied for federal Race to the Top grants. Ashley Shevitz is the district's communications director.
We would like to expand on some things that are really working in our district that provide more access to students to have the technology they need and also more training for teachers so that they, you know, might be able to expand some initiatives that we have. So, for example, on the technology, you know, it could be in the form of more laptops or tablets or ways that students can directly access information that they need that's available electronically.
She says the majority of the grant money would be spent to upgrade technology within the district.
We are applying, you know, it could be up to $28 million that we could potentially receive. It's going to be very competitive to receive that, but we thought it's worth trying. We really would like to provide a lot of these things to our students, so we took the shot.
In addition to spending on technology, she says some of the grant money could go to more training for more teachers. The school is expected to find out by the end of the year if it will receive the grant money.
The Fayetteville Police Department is seeking national accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies Incorporated. According to a release yesterday, a team of assessors will arrive at the department a week from this Sunday to examine all aspects of the department's policies and procedures, management, operations, and support services. All told, the department must comply with 190 standards to attain accreditation from the agency. As part of the examination process, comments from residents are requested, and a public information session will be held at 5 p.m. November 19th in the Fayetteville District Courtroom. More information can be found on the Fayetteville Police Department's Facebook page.
The Greater Eureka Springs Chamber of Commerce has announced the Grand Marshal for this year's Christmas Parade, scheduled for Friday, November 30th. According to a press release issued yesterday, television stage and screen actor Barry Williams will serve as Grand Marshal for the parade. Williams is best known for his role as Greg Brady in the sitcom The Brady Bunch. Mike Bishop, president of the chamber, stated that Williams was a great fit for this year's parade theme, a silver screen Christmas. Tonight's weather forecast calls for clear skies with a low in the upper 30s to lower 40s. Tomorrow, expect clear conditions with a high in the upper 50s to mid 60s. And tomorrow night, expect clear skies with a low in the mid to upper 30s. It is Election Day, and we should know the outcome of state, national, and local races tonight, maybe early tomorrow morning. To talk about the Arkansas political landscape, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business sat down with Clint Reed, Republican strategist with Impact Management Group in Little Rock, and Robert McClarty, Democratic strategist with the Markham Group, also of Little Rock. They're both running statewide races for a variety of legislative candidates.
Let's start with the easy stuff, and let's work our way down. Obviously, in this year's elections in Arkansas, the presidential race is going to be decided, I would say, maybe by about 9:01 in terms of where Arkansas's electoral votes are going to go. Mitt Romney has a big lead over Barack Obama in the polling data that you guys have looked at and that I've looked at. Interesting to me, though, Obama means a lot to both parties in this cycle. Let's start first with the Republicans. And what does Obama mean for the Republican message?
Well, I've told all of our clients that we've been involved with that if we're going to do a mail piece or a radio spot, we're going to mention Barack Obama. We're going to talk about national politics. I think Robert will tell you, on the other hand, he's going to talk about Mike Beebe and Mark Pryor and all these good conservative Democrats, as they'd like to tell you. It's all about Barack Obama all the time. If you look around these districts, state house, state senate, the higher the approval number that Barack Obama has, the better their legislative candidates will do. You're not seeing Barack Obama numbers very high in many of these legislative districts. I think Tuesday could really be a tsunami, depending on how the intensity actually unfolds on the ground on Election Day.
We'll come back to that tsunami statement there in a second. But let's talk about how important Obama is to the Democratic base, because it is important to get Democratic voters out there. How are you using Obama advantageously for Democratic candidates? And how are you positioning your candidates against some of the attacks that are coming from the Republicans on that?
Well, I mean, it's no surprise that the president's numbers here in Arkansas are not very good. So it is a fine balance. It's a very hard line to walk. But among the base, sure, he's still popular, and we're trying to get that message out to where it works. And in 2008, the younger voters really responded well, and the energy created there could help turnout numbers. So, you know, this race is not about what's happening in Washington, D.C. And I know Clint, my good friend here, has tried to make it about that. It's about what's happening in Little Rock. It's about what we're doing in Little Rock that's working. It's not about what's working in Washington or what's not working. And that's been kind of our point through this whole campaign, is to get that message out and make it about Arkansas and not about Washington, D.C.
And Governor Beebe is central to that campaign message for Democrats in Arkansas. Tell me how you guys are utilizing the Beebe agenda, the Beebe message.
Sure. I mean, the governor has a great record to stand on here. He's very well liked, and Clint, I think everybody can see that in their poll numbers. But it's not necessarily just about putting Beebe's name on a mail piece or a TV ad. It's more about the message that the governor's worked on: created new jobs, balanced the budget, kept us out of this financial hole that a lot of the other states around the country are seeing. So I think people respect what he's done, and I think the team that have been working with him, which in this case has been a Democratic majority, they kind of like what's going on in Little Rock, and we're trying to remind them of that message.
And you're seeing the BB message out there, too. Are you guys trying to play off of that, or are you trying to defend against that?
No, we come back to, do you feel like you're better off today than you were 4 years ago when Barack Obama became president? It's a very simple message, and most of the people that will go to the polls and vote on Tuesday will be people that are going to vote for Mitt Romney against Barack Obama. In 2010, we saw a very small number of ticket splitters, people that just started voting Republican and it just went down the ballot. To me, the big unknown is, does that trend continue? What we're seeing in our polling, we did a lot of polling last night, I think that the non-ticket splitters will show up, and I think it's going to be a big night for Republicans.
To both of you, is the Obama message more powerful than the BB message?
Well, you know, we think it's the BB message. We've said that all along. We looked at numbers back in the spring and saw where his numbers were really strong, and that was the play that we were going to make. Not only just his name, but his message, make it about Arkansas, make it about what's happening here on the ground, which in 2010, to be fair, we didn't do a good job of. And this time we felt like we needed to get out and make that message known from day one, and we feel like we've carried that message.
Obama more powerful than BB?
Absolutely. The intensity that we're seeing, and if you look at the early vote numbers, if you look at where the early votes are coming from, the precincts around this state in which people live that are going to early vote, about a 4% difference between where we were in 08 and where we are now, which tells me Republicans are as energized as they were in 2010. This election's all about Barack Obama. I will give Robert and the Democrats credit. They've done a better job in 2012 than they did in 2010. Some of these races are going to be close, i.e., if you look at Linda Tyler versus Jason Rapert, Alan Kerr versus Barbara Gray. These are very local races, but it's about turnout. I mean, Robert and I were visiting off camera, and we'll tell you, hey, we both knew early on that this was going to be these were going to be turnout races. We've seen Robert's group out with clipboards. Our groups have been out with clipboards. Those races will be close.
So on these races, can we say that when we look at the outcome of the race after Tuesday night's returns come in, who had the better turnout? Who had the better campaign apparatus for doing that?
Well, I think so. I mean, in a lot of cases, it's like Lynn just mentioned, it's going to be about turnout. It's about identifying who your voters are and getting them out. I mean, that's the old-fashioned saying in campaigns, but in this case, I think it really is true. And, you know, in the statewide polls, I'm giving Clint and everybody credit that Republicans are beating us. I get that. But this race is about individual races. This overall campaign season are about individual races and about getting your voters out. It's not about a statewide turnout. It's about winning in those selective races.
Agree?
Fair point. Wouldn't disagree for the most part, but if you look at the intensity and what is driving the intensity, it's the unpopularity of Barack Obama, plain and simple.
2010 was a tsunami year for Republicans, huge leaps and gains at the local level. Is this 2012 going to be another one of these tidal wave years? Is it a paradigm shift, as you've talked about in the past, or do you think it is a pendulum swing?
To me, Arkansas has been moving in a Republican direction primarily for one reason, and it's more demography than it is politics. If you look at the population shifts from southeast and eastern Arkansas to northwest and the collar counties in and around Pulaski County, you're seeing a more Republican voter. I believe that 2012 will be the solidification of that. I think we're looking at a healthy two-party system moving forward. Is it as big of a tsunami as it was in 2010? I think we'll know on Tuesday. My gut feeling is yes, but is it a paradigm shift? I think it's a demographic shift, but I still think we're tinkering on the edges. I really do.
Pendulum swing, paradigm shift.
Well, you know, look, in August, everybody thought the Razorbacks were going to go play for the national championship or go to the Cotton Bowl, and the Cotton Bowl at the point was a disappointment. So, I mean, that's why we play the game. That's why we have elections. There's a lot of polls going out there right now, some that we're seeing that give us a lot of good hope and some that Clint's seeing that give him a huge shift. So let's just get through the election and see where the ground games come in and see where the chips fall.
Democrats have done a good job this election cycle of digging through their opposition research, which they paid a pretty penny for, and utilizing that in some very tailored ways against Republican candidates. Do you think that has been effective?
You know, I think it's effective in a way that people need to know where other candidates have been in their, you know, in some of their votes and some of their back home deals. And I think it's not that it's been a negative campaign in that sense. It's just more bringing that out. And I think voters need to, it's, you know, you're making a pretty big choice here. You need to know about everybody's background, and I don't think that hurts.
Tell me you disagree with that.
At the end of the day, negative campaigns work. They truly do. People say they deplore them, they hate them, they don't want to see any more negative ads. But at the end of the day, people vote on two things, hope and fear. Put enough fear in people's minds to vote against someone, they will. I think Republicans have done a good job of countering the $250,000 that they've spent on opposition research. At the end of the day, is it about some of the local, what I call nitpicky issues that I think the Democrats have thrown at some of these races? Or is it about, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I think that's what people are going to vote on Tuesday when they go to the polls.
I was just going to say, better off than 4 years ago. And in Arkansas, we can say we were in a good spot. We were in a good spot 4 years ago, and we're in a real good spot today.
I took a bet with someone earlier this week that basically said they thought the Republicans were going to take the House. They said 63 in the House. They said 22 in the Senate. I said, I'll take the under on that, meaning that they won't get 63 or 22 and that the Democrats could hold. I'm hedging my bets on everything. Did I make a good bet?
I'll throw some numbers out. I think Republicans get to 23 in the Senate. I think we bust 60 in the House. I think the environment is collapsing for Democrats, and primarily due to independents breaking with the Republican brand. Not anything to do against with Mike Beebe, all to do with Barack Obama. At the end of the day, I think Tuesday is going to be a really big night for Republicans.
Democrats hold the Senate, Democrats hold the House?
I think so. I think it's going to be really close. I think there's about four races in the Senate that's going to determine that. I think there's about seven in the House. So, I mean, again, it's back to individual races, individual candidates with their message that works. So I think if that message comes out in those ground games, get everybody out to vote, I think you might be surprised, and I would definitely go on the under, but I think the Democrats hold both the House and the Senate.
All right, we're going to make our own bet here today. This is what it's going to be. If the Democrats hold, you're buying the all three of us lunch. If the Republicans win both houses, you're buying everybody lunch. And if they split, I'll buy both of y'all lunch. How about that?
I'll take it.
Robbie Brock from our content partner Talk Business sat down with Clint Reed, Republican strategist with Impact Management Group in Little Rock, and Robert McLarty, Democratic strategist with the Markham Group, also of Little Rock. They're both running statewide races for a variety of legislative candidates. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communication store near you or online at vzw.com/small business. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
President Barack Obama and Republican nominee Mitt Romney have been visiting many battleground states in their final weeks of campaigning.
Thank you, Virginia.
Hello, Colorado.
Thank you, Iowa.
Hello, Ohio.
The race for the White House is coming to an end. I'm Melissa Block. Join us tonight for results and analysis all evening long. Special coverage of election night from NPR News.
NPR's election coverage begins tonight at 8 on KUAF.
Later this month, Theater Squared will host their annual Gala for Education fundraiser. The November 15th gala will include a performance by Fort Smith native and University of Arkansas graduate Larry Luckinbill. He'll sample his one-man show about President Lyndon Johnson. Last week, I talked with Luckinbill's wife, Lucy Arnez. She's a board member of American Theater Wing, an organization that supports theater across the country, and the organization that created the Tony Awards. ATW gave Theater Squared a huge boost when that organization gave T2 one of its national theater grants in 2010. Last week, Bob Ford, the artistic director of Theater Squared, joined me for a conversation with Ms. Arnez about the state of theater in the U.S.
I believe Broadway is, 3,000 miles long. It never ceases to amaze me, the quality of work that is being done from Albuquerque to Podunk to Philly and everywhere in between.
Bob, that has long been one of the missions, one of the dreams of Theater Squared, right?
Yeah, we knew that we wanted to produce theater of at an off-Broadway quality. That was our aspiration. And, whether or not we are, we've never let up from that attempt.
Lucy, do you think this has become... You mentioned from Albuquerque to Philadelphia and everywhere else. Do you think it is even growing more than it, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, I didn't do a survey 10 or 20 years ago. Like, being a part of the American Theater Wing and making the American Theater Wing grants national now, which has only been for the last 2 years, that was like a big deal to make that leap. And it seems sensible since we are, in fact, the American Theater Wing. I hadn't really set out to see how many companies there were that were doing class work like this. So it wasn't really until we asked for applications to come in via the Internet on our website that I got a chance to see how incredibly many companies there are, that and the breadth and depth of the work that they're doing is impressive, really impressive. I mean, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago you started to think of regional theater in the same vein with community theater. You know, it was like, oh, regional theater, well, it's not really up to the quality of what New York Off-Broadway or Broadway can be, but that's so not true anymore. And if it wasn't for the Theater Squared and companies like that, I don't know how we would ever get any new plays to come to New York to be on Broadway or Off-Broadway, because it's so expensive every place, you know, in New York to mount a new play, then who can afford it? So you've got to get some sort of credibility out in the mainland and come in with that. And thank God for people who are putting up new artists' work, you know?
You know, I think for many people, there is still that belief that the funnel goes from Broadway out, that something premieres in New York and then tours. But what you're suggesting here is it has to work the other way.
Well, it works both ways. Clearly, there are certain people who mount gigantic shows, maybe come from London, or they go to one out-of-town tryout in Boston, and then they come into New York. And there's still those multi-million-dollar shows. But for the most part, they're the big, 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 big musicals that they sort of can, you know, they can bet that the majority of people will want to see, because for some reason when people have a hard-earned $200, they're going to bring their family to see theater. They don't usually take risks. They go to see the things they think are going to make them laugh and scream and jump up and down and be musicals. And so there were always going to be those. But then there's other shows that come to New York from other places that give us these magnificent The Pillow Man, and, you know, things that you could never raise money for in most places. They would have to start somewhere else and get fantastic reviews, and word of mouth is great, so that some New York producer would take the risk that it costs to even pay the rent on some of these theaters in New York City. So I don't know. It's both. And, of course, people want to bring big Broadway triumphs to the middle of the country, too. You like to say, direct from Broadway, you know. But it's so funny because there's a play that'll come out of a place like the San Diego Old Globe Theater, and it'll make it, and it'll go to Broadway and become a big hit, and then it'll go back to San Diego and say, direct from Broadway. Wait, it was here first.
Well, and Bob, I want you to come in on this part of the conversation, too. It's one thing to have a Theater Squared in Fayetteville or a Rude Mechanicals in Austin, Texas, but you have to have the audience there, too. And what has been proven over the last 10 years especially is the audiences are there.
Yeah, they absolutely are there. That's been one of the really encouraging things about Theater Squared. And then also, I think potentially anywhere in the country, theater works in general. And to think, well, we have a less educated pool of people to choose from, or people aren't used to going to theater here, is ultimately a myth. I mean, it takes some work, but it's ultimately a myth. And I am excited about that because I'm involved also with teaching young artists, young theater artists and playwrights, and I want them to know that there are alternatives to New York or Chicago or L.A.
Bob, what did the American Theater Wing grant mean for Theater Squared?
Well, first of all, it was just personally and within the walls of Theater Squared, hugely, life affirming. You know, it affirmed what we were trying to do and what we were believing about ourselves. But then at every turn, we've traded on it. I'll be blunt. You know, we've just finished a round of auditions in New York, and to be able to tell a New York actor, yes, it is Arkansas, but we were one of 10 theaters selected you know, by the American Theater Wing for this grant.
Yeah.
Hugely helpful in raising the level of the artists who are coming out and having them feel excited about coming. And then, yeah, locally, it's just had a big impact on our extended family here, our community, and in raising awareness. So it's a huge service to theaters, and I think it's going to have I doubt if anyone's going to measure it, but I bet it's having already a measurable impact on the health of theater outside of New York. And I know theaters in New York and in the cities also get this, but that's great.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, though, Bob. That really is, because that was the intention. If we want to promote excellence in the theater, then we have to promote excellence in the theater and not just in New York. And how do we do that? And we use this, you know, we have a brand that is known for the Tony Awards, and a lot of people don't know the rest of the stuff we do, all those other wonderful programs, but they do know the Tony Awards, the American Theater Wing. So to be able to take that brand and move it around the country and allow other theaters to do just what you just said, that's exactly what we were hoping would happen. And so it's good to hear that that is how it affected.
Well, I'm going to ask one more question, because I grew up in a very small town that was far away from any theater. In fact, our high school didn't even have a theater department. And so there might be some parents who also are listening to this, because we cover a wide geographic area, that are in small towns that don't have quite the access, even, you know, to Theater Square or whatever. It's still quite a drive. What can parents do to, you know, get that artistic fervor or pass along the arts? Because, Lucy, I know you grew up in an artistic household, and judging by the successes of your children, they are doing, almost all of them, if not all of them, doing well in some artistic endeavor. What can be done in the household to encourage the arts?
Well, you know, these days with the internet, there's a lot, because you can actually tap into some performances. I would say first and foremost, it would be interesting to go on to americantheaterwing.org, to our site, and ask them to just download for free some of the working in the theater seminars, or it's a thing called In the Wings, where we interview people who actually work in the theater behind the scenes, and you know, from all different kinds of creative standpoints, not just actors and directors, but the people who work all the other stuff. And you get kind of invested in how theater is made. And then I would say there's got to be some local community live somewhere near you. If they come to town, if somebody comes through, you should go and see it. What would you say, Bob? I mean, you're there.
If you're lucky, Theater Squared is coming to your local high school. Since we won the award, I think we've almost doubled the number of high schools that our touring show is going to. We're in the 40s at this point. Mm. All around Arkansas. So pay attention to whether we're coming. But then, if you're going to Little Rock or you're going to Fayetteville, come and see a professional production. And I know at Theater Squared, if you can get a $10 ticket. Your kids can.
Yeah.
See actual, you know, take that risk and see a piece of live theater and see what that magic is all about.
Lucy Arnaz is a board member of the American Theater Wing. Bob Ford is artistic director of Theater Squared, based in Fayetteville. Theater Squared will host its annual Gala for Education November 15th at Mermaids in Fayetteville. You can learn more about that event at theater2.org. And for more information about American Theater Wing, you can go to americantheaterwing.org. It is Tuesday, the 6th of November, Election Day, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, who is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And I'm going to announce my choice for president right now.
Okay.
Hetty from NCIS Los Angeles. There are bumper stickers.
Okay. Know what this means. Go ahead.
But I digress.
Okay.
Trust me, there are people out there who know what it means and are applauding.
Okay.
Tonight, you can see Up Among the Hills if you have not already.
For free.
6 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. It is, of course, a new documentary by Larry Foley about Fayetteville. Second night of auditions for A Christmas Carol today, Second Chances, 7 o'clock at the Rogers Little Theater. Boston Mountain Brass Works performs tonight at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the UA campus in Fayetteville. That's free. And if you need a little metal to get through the election, and I swear this is where I'm going to be tonight. I swear I am. Two bands, In This Moment and Hatebreed, at 7:30 at George's Majestic Lounge, just $15. You could pay three times that for this show anywhere else.
All right.
So it's a deal.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Charlie Rich was born in St. Francis County, December 14, 1932, and lived in Saline County in his later years. Heard here is an early chart hit for Rich, Mohair Sam, from 1965. It's ironic that as diverse a musician as Charlie Rich was, the Arkansasian will go down in history as a country music performer. Beyond country, rock and roll, gospel, and R&B, he seemed most comfortable doing jazz. This episode of Arkansongs focuses on the R&B side of Charlie Rich of Colt in Benton, Arkansas. Charlie Rich had minor hits in rock and roll and rhythm and blues, but on classic labels in their respective genres, Sun and High Records. After years, Rich made a splash in the early 1970s when the songs Behind Closed Doors and The Most Beautiful Girl became massive international hits. But musically, there's a lot more to Charlie Rich.
Who is the coolest cat? That is what I am. Fast talking, slow walking, good looking.
As a rural R&B performer, Slim Harpo, heard here doing his version of Charlie Rich's Mohair Sam, straddles the lines of genres, much like Charlie Rich did. In 1973, Rich was named the Country Music Association's Male Vocalist of the Year and the CMA's 1974 Entertainer of the Year. But Charlie Rich was the wrong artist to try and categorize, especially as country. In fact, this style of country music wasn't considered very country by everyone, and his big songs crossed over to the pop charts and pop radio. Rich and Billy Sherrill, Rich's longtime producer, helped usher in the so-called country-politan sound, characterized by strings and lush production. Still, Charlie Rich was sufficiently offended that when he announced the following year's CMA Entertainer of the Year, John Denver, Rich burned the announcement, live, on national television. The moment could be seen as Rich's own repudiation of the trappings of genre and fame as much as any statement on John Denver, who he purportedly liked. Either way, it was a highly symbolic, if not literal, beginning of the end of Charlie Rich's time in the sun as a country music superstar.
And when we get behind closed doors, and then she lets her hang down, you know she makes me glad. Oh, she makes me glad that I'm a man. I tell y'all that no.
Charlie Rich had already taken a diverse musical path. When his song Lonely Weekends hit the top 30 on Sun Records, some thought it was secretly Elvis Presley. Rich's song Who Will the Next Fool Be became a hit for Bobby Blue Bland and was later recorded by Solomon Burke. Bland and Bobby Womack, among others, recorded Rich's song I Take It On Home. After Charlie Rich's Behind Closed Doors became a smash, it's been recorded by Percy Sledge, Diana Ross, Bobby Womack, and many others. Tom Jones recorded it, as well as Charlie Rich's The Most Beautiful Girl. Heard here is Little Milton's version of Behind Closed Doors. Stax Records in Memphis, Tennessee, at this point being run by Brinkley, Arkansas native Al Bell, released Little Milton's version as a single in April 1974, and it nearly cracked the R&B top 30. This song was such a great song, Little Milton was quoted as saying. Little Milton having an R&B hit with Behind Closed Doors on Stax Records was a nice turnaround for Charlie Rich, since Rich had done more than one Stax classic himself, including recording Sam and Dave's When Something Is Wrong With My Baby in October 1966 for Memphis's High Records. Songwriters Isaac Hayes and David Porter had pitched the song to Charlie Rich as well as Sam and Dave. Both songs were recorded at about the same time at Stax and High Records in different parts of the city of Memphis. Heard next is Rich's Love Is After Me, another Hayes and Porter song from the session by Charlie Rich, and released as a single in fall 1966 on High Records.
Love is after me, won't let me be, should I run away? Love is after me,
Arkansaser Charlie Rich died July 25, 1995, in Hammond, Louisiana, having spent too many years on the musical sidelines after his fame flame out. And while his status as a country music superstar is solid, the forays of Charlie Rich into rhythm and blues remain mostly tantalizingly unexplored. Here in its entirety is When Something Is Wrong With My Baby, showing the R&B side of Colt Arkansas's Charlie Rich, written by Isaac Hayes and David Porter, and recorded for High Records in Memphis, Tennessee in October 1966.
Something is wrong with my baby. Something is wrong with me. And if I know that she's worried, then I feel the same misery. Been through so much together. We stand as one, and that makes us better. And when something is wrong with my baby, something is wrong with me. She means to me, you just wouldn't understand. People can say she's no good for me, but she's still my woman.
Something Is Wrong With My Baby, written by Isaac Hayes and David Porter, and recorded in October 1966 by St. Francis County native Charlie Rich. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information or to subscribe to the podcast, visit arkansongs.org.
If you remember earlier presidential elections, ones that included Where's the Beef and Voodoo Economics, then you might be happy to hear about a new business in Evelyn Hills Shopping Center in Fayetteville, where classic video games line the walls. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has a preview.
Although coin-operated video games are not as prevalent as they were before the rise in popularity of the home video game console, vintage video game fanatics in Fayetteville will soon have a new haven in which to while away countless hours blasting at asteroids, jumping over barrels, and toppling turtles. That's one of the reasons why Fayetteville resident Shay Mathis decided to open Arcadia Retrocade, a new arcade with more than 50 vintage arcade games set to open in the coming days at the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center in Midtown Fayetteville.
What we're hoping to do is sort of create a little pocket alternate universe here, where when you walk through the front door of the Arcadia Retrocade, you're kind of like walking into an alternate universe where there was an arcade from 1982 that just never closed. Is there something that one can experience when you're playing a video game, or it's kind of akin, and no offense to our readers and my former AP Lit teachers and stuff, it's something along the lines of when you get lost in a really good book. There's a similarity in the experience of getting lost in fantasy, of getting lost in the experience of playing one of these games and being in a place where you could just forget all of your troubles, forget all the stuff that's going on in the outside world, and just have fun like you did when you were 12.
But this arcade is a little bit different than many other arcades. One machine that will not be found within the arcade's walls is a change machine. Mathis says that no quarters are necessary to play in this arcade.
Once you pay to enter the arcade, you pay for nothing else unless you buy a code or something from the snack bar. All of the game machines, in other words, are free play.
In addition to the many stand-up arcade machines that will line the walls of the Arcadia Retrocade, a raised platform in the center of the room will provide seating for the arcade snack bar, a handful of cocktail table arcade games, and an area for a monthly featured classic video game console. Mathis says that he hopes to create the feel of an arcade that opened in 1982 and never closed, and that the machines in his arcade have the patina to match it.
I like the fact that the games show their hair a little bit later, but it shows the character, it's part of the character of each game, the history of each game. You know, we have an old little Pong. It's actually a Pong knockoff cocktail table game that came out of a pizza party in the 70s. It's fun to imagine the history behind each one of these games. We like some of the games showing a little bit of their wear, so that when you play this thing, you know that it has been through the ringer. It has been possibly all over the country and back just to get here to you, to have you play it and enjoy it now, 20 years after the last time you played the board game.
Mathis says that the games in the arcade come from a variety of sources. Some games were found after long hours of scouring Craigslist, while others were bought at auctions that included arcade machines, jukeboxes, toy cranes, and other machines generally found in restaurants and at the entrance of box stores. The games cost between $200 and $300 a piece on average, and though they may look a little rough on the outside, Mathis says that most of the games needed little work to get them up and running.
Simple cleaning, dusting, so cleaning the contacts, and just double checking to make sure there weren't stuff that wasn't collected properly. So with very little experience, I managed to get 3 or 4 of the games up and running just as soon as we got them home and off the truck that were not actually working when we bought them. You need to have a little bit of know-how on the technical end. Unfortunately, you know, somebody's who have been playing around with this sort of thing for some time and have had a little bit of experience and are also kind of learning as we go on some of the, certainly some of the older ones, you know. So yeah, so here and there you have to do a little soldering or a little this or a little that or
And considering the age of the majority of games in the arcade, Mathis says that people shouldn't be surprised if they come in one day only to find that their favorite machine is out of order. The oldest game inside is more than 30 years old and is a verifiable classic.
This is Asteroids. Most people who were in arcades in the 80s will recognize Asteroids as one of the quote old school games, and this was made in 1979. It's a little faded, but it still plays as well as it did, you know, probably a year or two after it rolled off the factory floor.
Mathis says that Asteroids will occupy a special place in front of the arcade with all of the classic games, which will include other titles such as Pac-Man, Centipede, Donkey Kong, and the original Mario Brothers arcade game, which Mathis says he remembers playing as a child living in Fayetteville.
And this particular game, they used to have in one of the grocery stores here in town, and my friend and I were talking about trying to probe memory banks to recall whether or not it was the IGA down the corner of Lafayette and 71, I'm pretty sure. Because when I would go spend the night and have a sleepover at his house, and, you know, invariably his mom would need to pull over and get some groceries or something, and she'd give us each a quarter and say, have at it, and then she'd go grocery shop, and we'd sit there on one quarter apiece and just burn an otherwise boring 7.5 minutes up.
And childhood dreams are what Mathis says is responsible for fueling his desire to open an arcade.
This or something like this is the kind of project, the kind of sort of quote dream job that I and a lot of my buddies as kids would have said we would love to do. Man, we'd read on our own arcade one day.
it's the kind of thing that, you know, sitting around talking with your friends when you're 12 or 15 or even when you're, you know, in those murky college years trying to figure out why you're majoring and what you chose to major in, that sort of a thing. You invariably get to that point of the night where you're having that discussion, you know, I just wish we could open up our own comic book store. I wish we could run an old art house theater and just play awesome movies and blah, blah, blah. That sort of discussion. This is the kind of thing we, as friends, have talked about for years.
He says that the thought occurred to him to open an arcade at a time when he was unemployed. While he says he could have worked for somebody else relatively comfortably, he was unsure whether he would be able to live with himself had he not taken the chance on opening his own business. And opening a vintage arcade doesn't come without its setbacks. Mathis says that while he planned to open in the middle of October, construction delays caused him to push back the grand opening numerous times.
I'll give you a very good example. The bathrooms that we needed to use, that we were 100% full bathroom remodel back in the back. And when the original building was built, this particular wing of the building, they did not plumb for a sewer all the way across the length of the building. So the plumbing stopped at a little tiny, rinky-dink little employee bathroom. And so we literally had to get in and bust up about 35 feet of concrete to lay a trunk line, a sewer line, set in the concrete. And so I would definitely call it a complication. It's not something that our guys couldn't handle. They did a great job, and that actually didn't take even as long as I thought that would, but that was certainly a complication.
And aside from construction, Mathis says that the process of opening an arcade isn't for the faint of heart.
It's been crazy, it's been absolutely nuts and fun and everything, all of that stuff that you can imagine. It has been that. Lots of sleep deprivation, lots of budgeting.
While he says he has been putting in long hours trying to get the arcade ready for its opening, Mathis says opening the arcade couldn't have been possible without the help from a handful of family, friends, and other people who have lent their services to making his arcade dreams come true. The Arcadia Retrocade is set to open this week. For more information, Mathis suggests that interested parties should seek out the arcade's page on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 6th of November, 2012. Today is Election Day. Millions of people across the country going to the polls, elect legislators and judges and sheriffs and school board members and, of course, the president. The first federal election under our Constitution held in 1788. Only 11% of eligible voters voted. To be eligible, you had to be a white male property owner, but different states had trouble defining what a property owner was, so there was confusion. And in order to vote in that first election, 1788, voters had to travel many miles to the nearest polling place, which was often a tavern, the candidate standing outside, and in many precincts there were no ballots. People just announced their votes to the sheriff in a loud, clear voice, and then they stood by the candidate they had voted for, who usually offered them something to drink. It wasn't until 1820 that American voters in every state could vote in the presidential election. Before that, many states just let the legislature choose the presidential electors who would cast their votes for president. And even after the popular election had come in, different states held Election Day on different dates. The first uniform Election Day did not take place until 1845 on November the 4th. For the first 50 years of elections in this country, only about 15% of the adult population was eligible to vote. Poor people were not, nor were women. And many African Americans were prevented from voting throughout the South until the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It was Mark Twain who said, "If there's any valuable difference between a monarchist and an American, it lies in the theory that the American can decide for himself what is patriotic and what isn't. I claim that difference. I am the only person in the 60 millions that is privileged to dictate my patriotism." Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran entitled The Fox. It was an ordinary morning, November, thin light, and we paused over our pancakes to watch something red move outside. Our house is on an untamed patch of land, and across the lagoon, another house surrounded by trees. On the banks of their shore, facing us, a fox. We thought he might be a dog at first, for he trotted and sniffed like a dog. But when he turned to us, we knew he was nobody's pet. His face was arranged like a child's face, playful, dainty, and his eyes were liquid and wild. He stood for a while, looking out, as if he could see us in our pajamas, then found a patch of sand beneath a tree and turned himself into a circle of fur, his head tucked into his tail. It was awful to watch him sleep, exposed, tiny, his eyes closed. How can any animal be safe enough to rest? But while I washed our dishes, he woke again, yawned, and ran away to the places only foxes know. My God, I was tired of being a person. Even now, his tail gestures to me across the disapproving lagoon. A poem entitled The Fox by Faith Sheeran from Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites. Reputation.com. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from the Rogers Little Theater, presenting Checks and Balances November 8th through the 11th. This drama by Oren Softee tells of a young music student and his relationship with an elderly woman and her finances. Twists and turns challenge his values and ethics. Tickets and more information available at rogerslittletheater.org. And Walton Arts Center presents Letters Home Sunday afternoon at 2. The performance puts the current wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq front and center with actual letters written by soldiers serving in the Middle East. In honor of Veterans Day, a limited number of free tickets will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. Tickets can be picked up at KUAF Studios at 9 South School Street in Fayetteville, 575-2556 for more information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Liberty.
And Liberty?
Yes, it's in Sebastian County, south of Greenwood.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm looking at the map, right?
Yes.
And I found a Democrat Arkansas and a Republican Arkansas.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Where are they?
Well, Democrat is in St. Francis County. It's like southwest of West Memphis.
Okay.
Okay. And Republican is in Faulkner County. It's north of Conway.
Which is weird because that means Republican is left of Democrat.
Uh-huh.
Which is not what you would think.
But yay, fun times with the map.
Yes. let's see.
Yes.
You and I both saw Flaming Lips.
We did.
Sunday night, Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. I saw the whole thing.
I had to, but I ducked out early.
I thought it was a fantastically odd and wonderful show.
Mm-hmm. It was very entertaining.
Yes.
I was incredibly entertained.
Yes, and I kudos to the University of Arkansas for bringing them in. Because that's not your normal sort of show at Barnhill Arena.
No, so kudos to them. Congratulations on the show.
Yes. And Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back together tomorrow, and we'll have many of the results, hopefully, by the time we're on the air tomorrow at noon.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Have a great election day.